And this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenating radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it working? Bill, can you feel it working?
I can feel it. I am ready to philosophically terraform the planet one instant servant at a time with Ben Stone.
Cool. So we're not going to go into a lot of the details about where Bill is or where I am or whatever. We are about, what is it, Bill, like 6,000 or 8,000 miles apart?
We are. I'm at 5,000 feet, but I'll give you my vertical latitude, but I won't give you my horizontal position. How's that?
That'll work. I'm on the Gulf Coast of Alabama, which is really beautiful and wonderful and starting to heat up, but it's pretty nice here. It's kind of nice to have Bill on a show with me. I had intended on having Bill on my podcast, on the Bad Quaker podcast, in the last month or so that it was going, and the thing just kind of fell apart, and I wasn't able to do that, and we just shut it down and got away from it. Unfortunately, I didn't get Bill back on the show, so this is a real treat to be able to talk to Bill, and we can kind of share our experiences and everything. Bill, I consider Bill a good friend. I have sat at a campfire with him. I've talked to him. He and I have shared a drink together, and not out of the same glass, of course, but I consider Bill a good friend, and he's one of the people that I love to talk to because he challenges my intellect. He is clearly smarter than me. He has a better vocabulary than me. And therefore, he exercises my brain when I talk to him. And I really appreciate that. Bill, you had an article recently at your website, ZeroGov. And I read that and I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to talk to you today about that if you're up for it.
I'd love to do that if we could cover some other topics. And I also wanted to say that there's a parallel relationship here, because I hold, you know, Ben in the highest esteem. And we are great friends. And I consider him to be a philosophical brother for the most part. You know, we participated in panels together where we found, ironically enough, we were on a pro-life panel at Porkfest, which you think, you know, doesn't quite jive with libertarianism in a conventional sense. But then again, Ben and I are not your conventional libertarians, being abolitionists.
Very true. So what was the name of that article over at ZeroGov that I just read?
See, now you've stumped me, because I wrote it about the Constitution, and I don't have the title in mind, but if everybody goes to ZeroGov.com, they'll be able to find it there. I just posted a brand new essay on the government's war on passive protection and the potential ban on body armor and stuff like that. But underneath that is my article of the Constitution. Very briefly, as a preamble, the reason why I wrote this is I get so many parchment worshipers and constitutional idolaters out there who come to me and say, you know, it is not only anathema, but it's just awful of you to criticize the founding document of the United States. I have made it my mission, as you've noticed on my website, besides going after cockroaches, going after the Constitution. And what I've done here is I've taken the first 10 years, from 1791 to 1801, and I have delineated and outlined all the perfidy, villainy, horror, and terror that was imposed by the federal government when the ink wasn't even dry on the Constitution. And when I research my articles, sometimes I'll find out things that I don't know, and I like that. You know, when I've discovered something that I didn't know, what I didn't know that was astonishing, Ben, and you know this from having read the essay today, a 1792 decision, this is a mere year after the Constitution, ink has dried on its ratification, we have a decision that was hearkened to by Justice Roberts on the Supreme Court concerning the Obamacare tax, where he uses this as a rationale to have national socialist health care in the United States to tax not only action, but inaction. And it astonished me that he had reached back to less than a year of the birthday of the United States under the Constitution to find the justification for that tax. Did you find that astonishing?
I did. And you know, what struck me in reading that was something that I've toyed with in my mind for quite some time. And that is that your regular average person who works a job and, you know, drives to work every day and comes home and tries to clear his mind by watching some TV or something or reading a book or whatever, and has dinner with his spouse or her spouse. And, you know, just that regular person who's living their life, they don't keep in mind this 200 and whatever it is, 40-year memory of all the stuff that's been going on. But those guys up there on the so-called Supreme Court and people in Congress and the guys pulling the strings, the people who, you know, that actually pay them, the lobbyists and all those, that whole swarm of scum up there in Washington, D.C., they know exactly what they're doing, and they remember all this stuff. That's, you know, they justify doing what they do because they know what they've got away with so far, and they can refer back to that and use that to get away with more. And your average guy out on the street doesn't know that these decisions that are being made today, in fact, are constitutional. They're based exactly on what the so-called founding fathers expected and wanted the government to be like. And you can go right back and read Hamilton's I was reading Hamilton's speech to the Continental Congress when he was one of the people pushing the Constitution to be ratified. And you read what he says in there, and, you know, there's this thing that I learned very young when I was a kid, and I was around a lot of gang-type, you know, motorcycle gangs and people that were involved in crime and stuff like that. And the leaderships in those organizations, they kind of learn their own way to speak. They learn how to talk so that people who are who need to know what they mean know what they mean. But somebody who would just walk up, or somebody who would overhear them in a restaurant or something, wouldn't necessarily know what they're talking about. It just sounds like, you know, just conversation. So you can actually use very carefully chosen words to tell somebody to go and do something horribly immoral or horribly illegal. And you can do it in such a way that if you're being recorded or if somebody's listening or whatever, you have a way to get out of what you're saying. And this is exactly the way these politicians talk. And the same way Hamilton was talking in, 1788 or 1789 or whatever, when the Continental Congress was meeting to discuss the Constitution, that same double speak that you see among gangsters and among mafia and among, you know, Hell's Angels, that same kind of double speak is common among politicians. And that's why they can say these things. And then 200 years later, they can go back and say, no, see, it's right there. Right there's, it's justified. It's right there in the law. We don't have to argue this. It's already been decided for us. And what can you do? It's already there.
You know, it's such a profound and sublime point that you make, Ben, because what it means is that anything somebody crafts in a document as a governing document among, in this case, millions of people, they can make that document sing in precisely the key that they wanted to achieve their odious ends. And that's what's happened with the Constitution. And I agree with you 100%, and I thank Kenneth Royce, a.k.a. Boston Tea Party, in his book, The Holy Grail of Liberty, turning me on to that. And also the 85 papers of the Anti-Federalist, which are just as important, if not more important, than the Federalist, and expressing the horror that they saw where, I mean, we are a mere 1783 is the Treaty of Paris. It's less than a decade when they're crafting this political coup in Philadelphia. And people who are attending, especially Anti-Federalists, are looking on with horror because they're saying, well, why did we fight for 8 years? Because in essence, what we've done is we've taken that totalitarian in London and we put him in American continental clothes, and he's right here among us now. And that's horrific.
You know, the doublespeak strikes me really odd, because you can see it in Washington and Hamilton's writings and their letters to each other and so forth like this. And you see things like they'll use the word liberty and they'll say, you know, we're fighting this war for liberty, or we just fought that war for liberty. And what they mean, and it's real obvious if you understand the double speak that they're using, what they mean is we are now free from Great Britain so that we can establish law our way so that we can be the masters. We have kicked out the old masters so that we can be the masters. Now, you got somebody else like Sam Adams, or you got somebody like Patrick Henry. He says, give me liberty or give me death. He's talking about the kind of liberty that we're talking about, like not having a thumb over you and not having a government breathing down your throat every second. That's what he's talking about. But the problem is,
he's talking about the liberty in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. But they use the same words. So when you hear, you know, Hamilton talking about liberty, he's not talking about actual liberty. He's talking about him, he and his elite group being in charge. They just replace one king with another king that's a different title in a temporary position. That's all it is.
Did you read in my article what James Adams in that HBO biopic was such a whitewash of who that monster actually was? Did you read what he wanted to be addressed as in the White House?
Yeah, I've read this about George Washington. Even among his, during the war, he insisted, like when he walked into a room, he insisted everybody come to their feet and address him as, was it Your Highness or Your Majesty or something like, some imperial, some, you know, great title like that, that George Washington demanded every time he walked into a pub.
It was, indeed. And what Adams wanted was, His Highness, the President of the United States of America and Protector of the Rights of the Same.
Wow.
What? What?
He thinks he's Charlemagne.
It's so hubristic. He does. He does indeed. And he wasn't. You know, none of these guys were. All these guys were simply political opportunists and pikers. There's a reason why Jefferson was in Paris at the time that they were drafting the Constitution, because I think they knew that he had such a powerful persona and such a perceptive mind when it came to this, he probably would have done a real good job of wrecking their efforts at not reviving the Articles, but in this political coup and foisting this Constitution on people.
That's absolutely correct. I have a quote from Hamilton from his address at the Continental Congress that I wanted to read before we go to the break. He says, "It is an unquestionable truth that the body of the people in every country desire sincerely for prosperity, but it is equally unquestionable that they do not possess the discernment and stability necessary for systematic government." When we get back from the break, I'll talk about that a little bit. But first we're going to go to the free market, well, as free as it can be. And we'll be right back on Freedom Fiends.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Forces. Oh, here comes. Not to be released on the air.
And we are the Freedom Fiends. We're so busy talking during the breaks. We're too busy talking to do a talk show. That's what one of our taglines is. But with me, I'm Ben Stone, and with me is Bill Buport. You know, I think in the first segment I actually forgot to introduce us. I'm pretty sure I did. So Bill Buport is from ZeroGov, and I'm Ben Stone. I used to have a podcast called the Bad Quaker Podcast, and now it's retired, but it's still there. You can find it, badquaker.com. And before the break, I had quoted Hamilton, and I thought that I could get it in before the break started, but I just barely got the words in. But if you actually read this thing, what he says in this speech to the Continental Congress is, sure, we know everybody in every country, they all want prosperity, they all want to live a good life, they want to be happy, but you know what? People are just too dumb to govern themselves, and that's why they need people like me. Now, really and truly, if you sit down and analyze, and I'm not just taking this out of context, read the whole thing there of his whole speech. It's not very long, it's like one page. You read this speech of the Continental Congress, and that is the essence of what Hamilton believed. He really felt like, you know, all those dirty masses out there, the hordes, the lesser people, those people are just too simple-minded to govern themselves. And that's why God put people like me on the earth to, you know, to tell them what to do, to how to live their life. And that is reprehensible to me. It just sickens my stomach that whenever somebody says to me, oh, the great founding fathers, I think of things like that from Hamilton, and it just makes me ill. What's your opinion on that, Bill?
So millions can't govern themselves, but one can govern millions. I mean, there's so many ways that you can tease this out and take it apart and show it for the kind of hubristic totalitarian nastiness that it really is, this kind of assumption and presumption that I belong on a plantation, according to Hamilton, according to Washington, according to Adams, according to all these residents of the awful office since it was first occupied in 1791 under the Constitution. All of these people have felt that the proles and the citizens and the tax cattle, that they were nothing more than creatures to be directed. As a matter of fact, they view themselves as zookeepers, and the nation state is a tax jurisdiction, and we're all tax cattle and helots to be, you know, registered, branded, and used for whatever they think we need to be used for.
That's really true. It's very aggravating, and to think, you know, that so much praise and so much honor is heaped upon these people. What does Boston Tea Party call them? The founding lawyers. I love that phrase.
He does. He calls them the founding lawyers. You know, I'm fond of, I think that in state categorically that cops, I call them cockroaches, and I'm trying to make that a meme that everybody uses, but cops and the police in America are the existential threat to human liberty, because if you ask yourself, how does a political tyrant actionize, well, that's not even a word, how do they make actionable their totalitarian ambitions? Through police. Absent police and policing functions, no political tyrant, whether he is Bush, Obama, Stalin, Lenin, you name your political bad actor, and I think they all are, they can't do a thing unless they have a police enforcement mechanism. And all this entire time, this police enforcement mechanism has grown and grown and grown. And I'm convinced, you alluded to this in the first segment, that let's suppose the only thing that was in there was the welfare clause. A government, a central government, would have been able to take that welfare clause and torture the language, manipulate the language, and make it so that it would lead directly to what it has done since then with the Interstate Commerce Act, where we have 1943 Wickett versus Filburn, where it says that a man grew wheat on his own property. He didn't sell the wheat off his property. Therefore, he affected actual commerce. And then we fast forward now to the Roberts decision that I alluded to in the first segment, in which Judge Thomas's dissent said, and that last page is something very chilling to me. He said, not only are we being taxed on action, but we are being taxed on inaction. So Roberts' decision and Wickard versus Filburn in the Interstate Commerce Act and the Interstate Commerce Commission under Grover Cleveland, and then we rock it all the way back to the Constitution itself, all of that has a bow neatly tied on it that says we have complete control, we in this case being the federal government, complete control of every human transaction that transpires on this tax jurisdiction called the United States, and we'll enforce it.
That's really amazing. We're getting ready to go out to our next break, but stick with us. We're going to come back as soon as we visit the market a little bit, and we're going to have more discussion on this on the Freedom Fiends with Bill Buford and Ben Stone.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. this is what radio sounds like now.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. Ben Stone and Bill Buport, absent Michael Dean today. He's off doing something spectacular, I'm sure. And if you have noticed, there is a slight delay between Bill and I. We're something like 6,000 or 8,000 miles apart from each other, coming over Fiendphone rather than any of the other more government-related. Fiendphone also is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. And you can find out more about that at BIPCOT.org, or you can go to Fiendphone and download the beta version of Fiendphone for free. It's for all of its flaws, and there's not very many, it's way better than other alternatives that are out there that are more common, and it is free. Bill, we do have a little bit of a delay with going this far, but we're going to try to work around it. Hopefully those folks listening on the radio are not too upset with it. But before the break, we were talking about the founding lawyers and what not very nice people they are. What do you think, Bill?
We are 7,500 miles away from each other, just to be exact. And I think that the founding lawyers were a cabal. Gary North has alluded to this when he talked about the conspiracy in Philadelphia. Kenneth Royce has alluded to this in his brilliant book, Hologram of Liberty. The audience can read the 85 Anti-Federalist Papers. There's a guy by the name of Herbert Storing, who is sort of like the eminence Greece when it comes to the historian who's been the curator of the Anti-Federalist Papers. And there's like a 3 or 6 volume edition of the complete Anti-Federalist Papers available for a very it's a high price out there, and I'd like to get it someday. But there's lots of information that people can read about the other history of the United States, not what's celebrated on the History Channel, not what's celebrated by, you know, the pretty flags and the bad music and the government media education complex, always talking about this heroic venture where the land of the free and the home of the brave emerged from this brilliant document. In my mind, the Constitution is a devilishly clever instrument to make a slave people think they are free, and it is brilliantly crafted to do just that.
That's a really good description of it. I want to kind of just point out too, we're talking about Kenneth Royce. Kenneth Royce is maybe more well known by the name Boston Tea Party. That was the name that he wrote several books under. And if you're a gun guy, if you're listening and you're a person who's, you know, into firearms and so forth like that, you really believe that, you know, it's important to enforce your rights to keep and bear arms and so forth like that, Kenneth Rice is the guy who wrote Boston's Gun Bible. Bill, you're a gun guy. I'm a gun guy. You're like way more knowledgeable than me. What's your opinion on Kenneth Royce's book, Boston's Gun Bible?
Boston's Gun Bible Revised Edition has been on my nightstand now since the year 2004, I think, because the edition before that wasn't revised, had been on my nightstand since 2001. I pick it up on occasion now, you know, once or twice or three times a month. I use it as a reference volume. Boss and I have hung out together. As a matter of fact, I can say that we have had adult libations together and gotten rather hammered together, and that was lots of fun because we're both Monty Python fans. So we did Monty Python skits together, and that was a blast. So Boston's a pilot. He lives in Wyoming. He's written a number of really interesting books to include on African safaris. I think he's been on a half dozen African safaris. He's one of those guys I know who I say, man, I wish I could live a charmed life like him. He's one of those guys who makes me say, yeah, I want to be like Boston one day. So his gun knowledge is second to none with people that I know.
He is an amazing guy. I want to also re-mention a book that you mentioned by him is Hologram of Liberty. And if you're listening on the radio or if you're picking this up later on the internet or whatever, and you're like, what are these guys talking about? Pick up that book. It's not very expensive. Hologram of Liberty. And read that thing, because that he just lays this stuff out. And like you were saying, you know, Boston is a man's man. He's the kind of a guy, there's no foolishness about him. He is, not that he doesn't have a sense of humor, he does have a great sense of humor, but he is a no-nonsense man's man. And you're not going to see him wrapping himself in a black flag and kicking over a trash can or throwing a Molotov cocktail. He's not going to do that. That's not what he's about at all. But he's a guy that is solid on what he's not going to say. Here's another thing about Boston. Boston is not going to say something unless he has absolute confidence that he knows what he's talking about. And that is a real classy guy, if you can say that about somebody.
Oh, he's such a gentleman. He and I, you know, we both kid each other that we're both 19th century men trapped in the 21st century. So that, and Ben, I would invite you along, because from knowing you and having, you know, broken bread and shared a campfire with you and adult libations, I think you're in the same boat as Boston and I are.
That's a huge compliment. But I would gladly take the opportunity. I met Kenneth at a pork fest, actually, and we got to spend about an hour together, and I came away just realizing that this was a real guy that I could, you know, he's a kind of a person that you can be around and just be comfortable and know that you know, he's not trying to con you. You're seeing the real man when you're talking to him. There's no hologram there. But that's, you know, honesty is the key in that kind of thing.
It is. And we home educated all five of our children, and he wrote something called Modules for Manhood, which came out a couple years ago, and there's three volumes to it, and he's already published the first two, one of which is in Kindle. No, both of which are in Kindle. And I highly recommend those books. Now, I have the entire Boston Tea Party Library all signed, as a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, I am the proud owner of a hardback copy of Mullen Labe, the novel that he's written. And I think Boston has mentioned he may be working on a sequel.
That would be cool. I'd like to see that. You know, we were talking about the...
But I'd recommend to your audience members, if they just go to Amazon and take a look at, you know, his holdings, my books on Amazon, Zero Gov, Limited Government, Unicorns, and Other Mythological Creatures. It's also available for a very inexpensive price.
That's a good one to give a shout out to. If you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna read Hologram of Liberty, go ahead and get Zero Gov, because that's also a well worth the read. I wanted to touch on, you know, we were talking about these old guys that have been dead for 200 years, Hamilton and Washington and guys like that. But I wanted to bring it up to a little bit more up to date. I was talking about the doublespeak that those guys have a tendency to do. And we see it today. It's real obvious. Well, it was obvious to me in the Clinton years that's what, every time Bill Clinton opened his mouth, it seemed like there was a doublespeak going on. And I could also detect that in George W. Bush, and I could detect that really easily with the current, Obama, who we might say...
Resident.
The Oval Office. I like to reference a toilet as the Oval Office pretty regularly, but you like to call
it
the
Awful. What I do is I use the term Awful Office, which is, yeah, it's O-F-F-A-L. I think I couldn't think of a more perfect descriptor of the place.
Being the stuff that you cut out of a deer and leave behind for the coyotes when you're hunting.
It would be that. And I like to refer to it as the Waffle House, which stands for War Against Freedom and Liberty. So it's the Awful Office and the Waffle House.
You know, in modern times, there's a couple of guys that come to mind who were able to do this doublespeak in such a magical way that, at least for me, they fooled me when they were talking. And I didn't realize it until years later how badly that they were fooling me. But one of those guys is Ronald Reagan. When Ronald Reagan would talk, it would just tickle my ears, because he would talk about, you know, the last thing you want to hear is we're here from the government and we're here to help. You don't want to hear that. That's just a horrible, scary thing. And he would say things like that that were very anti-government and very libertarian sounding and very independent sounding. But when he was doing it, I believe he knew exactly what he was doing. He was giving what we call dog whistles. He was speaking in such a way that he tickles the ears of some without offending the ears of others. And there's no, it's just words. There's no substance behind it. And another guy in that same category, and they actually worked together, was Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman would say just wonderfully pro-market things, wonderfully libertarian things. And yet this is the guy that designed the payroll deduction process to make taxes more palatable and more comfortable so that we wouldn't rebel. He's the guy who said, you know what, you can end all of the anti-war protests by just getting rid of the draft, and all of the anti-war stuff will cease. Now, that's not to say, hey, you know what, this Vietnam War is unjustified and we shouldn't be over there doing that. That's not what he was saying. He was saying you can have all the war you want if you just get rid of the draft. Now, that's real tricky and not very honest, in my opinion. And that's a modern version.
Oh, it's
go ahead, Bill.
Ben, it's just obnoxious what you're describing. I agree. I happen to be a huge fan of David Friedman, who is Milton Friedman's son. I mean, he's really taken libertarianism on, and he wrote a book called The Machinery, I think it's A Machinery of Freedom, which is just brilliant. His writing is great. I've met him in person. He's like a little gnome with an afro, but he's one of the most intelligent human beings I have ever met. I mean, it's astonishing. I don't hold his father in high regard because I think that monetarism and Keystone Keynesianism are kissing cousins economically in that they embrace macroeconomics. And I'm fond of saying that macroeconomics is nothing more than the academic rationalization of government intervention in the economy by using sophistry, mathematics, and simply what Mises would call bad subjectivism in the examination analysis of how humans and firms operate, because Friedman was never really concerned with that. Now, you were talking about Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had that kind of mellifluous voice, sort of like you, Ben, where he just has that almost that perfect voice register, almost that perfect pitch. And, of course, he was an actor, so he knew what theatrical pause was about. He knew how to employ vocabulary for his audiences and such. There's a book out that I read by David Stockman called The Great Deformation. And while he doesn't come to all the right conclusions, he could use some Austrian schooling. He comes to a lot, and you'll see him on LouRockwell.com, as a matter of fact, David Stockman's columns. He comes to some good conclusions, but he does a great description of the hologram that Reagan was, because across the board, whether it was defense, whether it was welfare spending, all that stuff, he didn't cut anything. He didn't cut any departments. Now, one thing he did do is he did cut the tax rate from an astonishing 70% marginal tax rate to 28%. But this is the same Ronald Reagan who in 1967 with the Mulford Act started gun control in the U.S.
Yeah, and when we get back from this break, we're going to try to wrap up this hour and take you into the next hour. So stick with us, Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends. I'm Bill Buport. No, I'm not Bill Buport. I'm Ben Stone, and with me on the Fiend phone is Bill Buport from Zero Gov. And missing in today's show is...
And I wouldn't be ashamed to be Ben Stone. And missing from this broadcast is our able host, Michael Dean.
Yeah. But we'll try to get him on another one. We'll his health is improving, so if anybody's listening, and he's done a few of the nighttime shows, which is really nice to hear him back on the air again. But we're talking about, in the first hour here, we've been talking about the founding lawyers and the con that they pulled on everybody with their Constitution. And some of the stuff that was in your article really resonates with me, Bill. You know, you were talking about this decision, this Supreme Court decision from, what was it, 1790s?
92.
That was then used to justify Obamacare nowadays. And that's how they work.
Is that astonishing? What does that tell you? What does that tell? I mean, I was astonished when I made this discovery that he goes back to the, I think it's the Hilton decision in 1792.
And then in your article, you point out that he actually contradicts himself in his own, the justice that did this, the Supreme Court justice that did this, contradicts himself in his own statements. And what he says, I think, I can't remember the phrase that you used, but you said that it was a very childish form of logic that he used. And I thought that was really well written, because that's exactly what they do. They just, they'll turn things around in circles and say the opposite of what they mean. Oh, say that again. I'm sorry.
It's called The First 10 Years, The Monster Proceeds Apace. You had asked me that earlier, and I just brought it up. And he uses ex post facto ergo propter hoc, where he supports what he said because he includes what it was supposed to be in the afterthought. So it is a childish use of logic to do it, but it's very tortured. You know, a lot of the stuff coming out of the Supremes, when I look back all the way back to 1792, they employ some very tortured language to justify what they do, but they have to. Ben, they have to, because you and I, you know, for the audience, if you've listened to us bloviate for an hour, all I want you to walk away with is four words, and this will tell you what Ben and I are about. Don't hit, don't steal.
Yeah.
There it is. You can turn off the radio now. You've learned everything you need to know. Government violates the Ten Commandments every day, otherwise it couldn't exist. Government must behave in a terrorist fashion, which means politically motivated violence against noncombatants, every day. And cops are the standing army that the anti-federalists warned us about. And it seems almost too simplistic for me to say, well, don't hit, don't steal. Well, but that's what it all distills down to, doesn't it, Ben?
Yeah, it really is that simple. And who needs volumes and volumes and volumes of laws to go through and regulate every aspect of your life? Who really needs that when really, you know, it's that simple. Have you hurt somebody? Well, then let's investigate this and see if some wrongdoing has taken place. You didn't hurt anybody. You didn't hurt their property. You didn't take anything from them. How can there be a law broken? And how can law be anything more?
Who's the victim? Who's the victim?
Yeah. How can true law be anything more complicated than that? Did you harm someone? Did you harm their property? Well, if not,
what is the restitution?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I see. The restitution for the illegal vegetation is that you're going to put me in a cage.
It's nonsensical, really.
For 5 years life, and they'll have that well-being, your feeding, and your care. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
You know, and there's a thing, too, when you try to explain this to people, and this has happened to me I don't know how many times. I hope I can get this in before the top of the hour break comes in on us. But I don't know how many times I've tried to explain to people that what the current so-called justice system produces is anything but justice. There's no, I mean, you know, you can have a blindfold on throwing darts randomly toward a wall, and eventually you're going to hit a bullseye if you do it often enough. So sometimes the justice system produces justice, but there's nothing in the design of the justice system that will actually produce justice, other than a random act that occasionally happens. You know, throwing somebody into a jail, the alternative is not just turning them loose and letting them do anything they want, but throwing them in a jail is not a solution either. In the long run, you're not really doing the thing that you think the justice system does.
I would suggest that you and I and everybody has had somebody involved in their family in the legal system in some way.
Yeah. When we get back, we'll talk more about the legal system and all that stuff on the Freedom Fiends.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been using Blockit Pocket, and I love it. Blockit Pocket protects your cell phone, tablet, or laptop from remote tracking and data theft. I've tested it. It works. Put your cell phone inside, call from another phone, and the phone in the Blockit Pocket won't ring because all signals in and out are blocked. Avoid calls and texts at the wrong moment. Keep your location private. Protect passports and credit cards. Water-resistant, hand-washable, and stylish in many designs. Go to blockitpocket.com. That's blockitpocket.com.
This is Hour 2 of the Freedom Fiends, and the Freedom Fiends is broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone. With me on Fiend Phone is Bill Buppert from Zero Gov. And in case you didn't hear it in the first hour, we're about, what did you say, it's like 7,500 miles apart or something like that?
We are indeed. I'm at 5,000.
You still there, Bill?
I'm right here.
Okay. We kind of dropped out for a second there. So so before the hour, we were talking about the justice system and why it's not actually justice and how, you know, over 200 and whatever it is, 40 years, 230 some years, piles and piles of laws have been enacted. I would argue almost all of which are unnecessary, but some of the worst aspects of having a system like this, where you actually have people who are full-time lawmakers. I mean, just that alone, that should be, their red flags should go up, the fact that these people call themselves lawmakers. That's like, you know, from a Christian or a biblical point of view, that type of title should be reserved for either God, a deity, or, you know, in the Bible, somebody like Moses. Moses was the lawgiver because God gave him the law and he passed it on. But Moses didn't make up the laws. That was not the point of that story. The story was indicating that he was just the go-between, that the laws came from God. And so when we call lawmakers, when we call those vermin in Washington, that cesspool of Washington, D.C., when we call them lawmakers, I think it's blasphemous from a Christian point of view. I see it as blasphemous. I see it as kicking God off the throne. But then on an individual basis, you look at the laws that they pass, and they arbitrarily decide this plant is illegal. You can't have it. This plant over here is okay. This substance over here, you're allowed to possess. This substance, you're not. This kind of a gun shaped like this with this kind of a shoulder thing that goes up is bad. But this other one over here is okay for now. And it's all just arbitrary nonsense. Bill showed me a page with some charts on it. We're going to see if Michael can put either the charts or link to the charts in today's show notes on freedomfiends.com. But describe to the listeners, Bill, about what these charts were displaying and the craziness of the current war on drugs.
Well, you know, it's basically a war on illegal vegetation and a war on people's ability to alter their consciousness. And since 1972, when Nixon not only called for, by the way, a handgun ban in the United States, but he also started the DEA and really started this drug war rocking and accelerating the way it has. This infographic is it's just astonishing, the numbers that it has. It's very disturbing. You know, after four decades, the U.S. has spent $1 trillion. Not $1 billion, $1 trillion on this failed drug war. We have the highest per capita incarceration rate on planet Earth. We have 145 people who are serving 80% of the population in the federal cages are nonviolent offenders. And of the 2.3 million inmates in the U.S., more than half have a history of substance abuse and addiction. So Russia comes second to America as far as prison population per 100,000, then Rwanda, then Israel, and then you can go on down the list and read that. But Nixon is the one who coined that phrase, the war on drugs, in 71. And the first anti-drug budget was $100 million. Well, adjusting for inflation, the expenditure in the drug war has grown 31 times that.
Wow.
It's just astonishing. It's wrong in so many ways. It has altered our country in a way that has allowed the police state, the IRS, and every executive agency to use the drug war as a stalking horse to make transparent, in a one-way transparency, every human transaction that isn't politically related. For instance, we have no transparency, the NSA, or the three-letter agencies, or the awful office, and the awful things that they do, and the drone war murder program, and all these other things that America does in the name of its people. But what I would like to point out is that there's two positive things on the horizon. Number one, marijuana really seems to have taken off as far as legalization is concerned. I am a decriminalization proponent, not a champion of legalization, because I think what legalization does is it keeps it within the tentacles of the state, and then they extract tax monies from it, they regulate it, and I think that that will not end well either. And then I'd like to discuss later on what Portugal has done, because since 2001, Portugal decriminalized the possession and use of illegal drugs across the board, and they focused on treatment and prevention instead. And they have been a wildly successful experiment in what could be done right about this.
It should be noted, too, that there's a drastic difference in what you're saying there between decriminalization and legalization. Of the two, the simplest thing to do is decriminalization. The more difficult of the two is legalization. And legalization essentially...
For instance, you know, if it's very hard right now to have anti-sodomy laws in the U.S. and to say that homosexuality is wrong. It's an example of where formal criminal statutes have been removed and decriminalized because they become so either demoralized or not demonstrable as serving anybody at all, to include the government. So you don't have bans on homosexuality. And that's an example of former criminalization being decriminalized.
And perhaps gun laws are the exact opposite. Gun laws are showing how something can be legalized, and then you put brackets around it, and you control it, and you decide what can be shipped where, and you know how big a barrel can be, and whether or not it can have a silencer, and how many rounds it can chamber, and just all the nonsense that never ends. It goes into a legal nightmare.
Oh.
Where gun laws are just utterly ridiculous. And you think of the two, well, which would be better?
Oh, Ben, it's incredible to me. And that's one of the things that I can use when I fight the constitutionalists who say, well, there's the Second Amendment, thou shalt not be infringed. Well, by the way, and I talk about this in my latest article, in 1842, Arkansas said, it's a collective right, it's not an individual right. And by the way, your audience can research the 1934 National Firearms Act, the 1938 Federal Firearms Act, the 1939 U.S. v. Miller Supreme Court decision, the 1968 Gun Control Act, the 1986 Firearms Owners Protections Act, the NICS, the AWB, the import ban, 2007 NICS improvement. Now, that whole laundry list that I'm telling you, what I'm telling you is every one of those is an infringement that has got a stamp of all three of these alleged branches in the government, a stamp of approval from the Constitution. That tells you what it's worth.
Yeah. The Constitution doesn't do anything positive for the American people. It only protects the government and gives them an excuse to do whatever they ultimately want to do anyway. Part of the thing in the Constitution, you know, a lot of pro-constitutionalist people have never actually read the Constitution. They've read amendments to the Constitution, but they've never actually read the actual Constitution. That thing is wretched and leaves open doors that you could just bring a herd of elephants through. You know, the welfare clause, the necessary, what is it called? The something unnecessary clause?
I know the one that you're talking about, and I can't recall it right now. My brain is getting addled with age, but yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Hamilton actually made the statement in one of the Federalist Papers. You know, somebody had said, oh, well, this Constitution, blah, blah, blah. And he said, no, you know, with I think he mentioned one of the other of those two clauses, and I think it was the necessary clause. He essentially said, you know what? Once we get this thing into law, anything that we really need, if we really need it, we can just get it through that clause. And that, you know, it covers all of that stuff in those amendments that you're worried about, because some people were worried that the amendments were going to hold the government down too much. And Hamilton made the argument, no, in fact, this document is written in such a way that if we really find something necessary, we can do it. It doesn't matter. And that's the essence of what the Constitution is. It is this hologram. It's this idea that you might be able to control the government, but you never can. And that's how they get laws that are controlling how many rounds can be chambered, or how many rounds can be in a magazine, or, you know, whether or not it has a funny looking shoulder rest or not. I mean, the silliness of gun laws, and to inflict that onto the marijuana laws will be just as tragic. Instead, just stop making it illegal. That's all you have to do. It's that simple.
You know, and black markets are the lubricant of civilization. And if they do legalize that, the same thing will happen with marijuana that has happened with alcohol and such. Do you recall that Eric Garner was strangled to death by the cops in New York City for selling allegedly untaxed cigarettes?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll bet you anything that he bought a pack of cigarettes in New York City and then he sold them individually on the street. So those who said Eric Garner was evading the tax laws, no, he wasn't evading the tax laws, because I'll bet he bought that pack and paid the tax to New York City. But what he had done is he didn't have a permit to sell on the secondhand market. And this speaks to something that I wrote several weeks ago, where I said that the tax rate in the United States exceeds 100%. And
I think
it's important for your listeners to pay attention to that, because it sounds absurd on its face. And people would say, well, how can something like that be beyond 100%? When you look at property taxes, you look at estate taxes. You look at excise taxes. You look at gas taxes. You look at income taxes. You look at property taxes. You look at sales taxes. But you take all those, we all pay that. We all pay that penalty. If Ben owns a mining company, and you extract ore, whatever ore you sell to me as a wholesaler or distributor or somebody who's going to turn that ore into metal and fabricate something, you pay a tax on that ore. I pay a tax on the transaction with you. Whatever I sell as a refined product or a finished product, I'll pay a tax on that, and on and on and on.
Yeah, it's never ending. When we get back from the break, we'll get into a little bit more specifics on that same topic on the Freedom Fiends.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Hurts, 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 hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom is just a great thing.
Freedom Fiends. Freedom Fiends. During the break, Bill said, freedom is a great thing. And it really is. You know, that's the not just the name of the show. It's a description of each and every one of us, the host, Michael Dean, and all of us co-hosts that help him out on this. We are freedom fiends. We can't get enough of it. We want complete, total freedom. Not the freedom to hurt somebody else. Not the freedom to, you know, enforce ourselves upon somebody else. But we want freedom. And that desire, I believe,
preach it, brother,
is deep in the hearts of people, of all people. So Portugal. Bill, what's happening with Portugal?
Well, in Portugal, in July of 2001, they decriminalized possession and use of illegal drugs. And they focused on treatment and prevention instead. And they've got data through 2006 for HIV cases, which were reduced from 1,400 to 400. And wow. That Portugal, believe it or not, now has the lowest drug use rate of any Western European country at 0.9%.
Wow.
Versus 6.1% in the UK, 4.6% in Italy, 3.2% in Germany, higher, of course, in the United States. So it is a correlative relationship, not necessarily causative, because the evidentiary bar for rather high. So I'm just assigning a correlative value here. And I'm thinking to myself that if we were to decriminalize drugs in the United States, we would see a spike in usage, and then we would see a tremendous, to use a very hoary cliche, hockey stick devolution in the use of such things that would just go down significantly. Now, here's the thing about marijuana that I find so interesting. Hemp, and the founding lawyers knew this, by the way, hemp has amazing qualities. I'm not being a witch doctor about this. There are amazing curative qualities with it. There's a reason why when people are going through chemo, they get medical marijuana. There's a reason why medical marijuana in the United States has really rocketed as a legislative train ride and taken on, because so many people say, that marijuana, that won't do anything for me. Well, it's a miracle when they take it. And by the way, I'm not a smoker. I smoke a cigar on occasion. I smoke a pipe on occasion, but I don't bring it into my lungs. I don't like the delivery of THC into my lungs. And I think once the market gets a hold of this, the market's going to give me all kinds of delivery systems for THC that are going to be alternatives to smoke, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I should mention I do not partake of marijuana in any form. I don't smoke anything at all. I've never really been a smoker. I smoked pot back in the 70s when it was pretty common. But I haven't intentionally breathed any smoke into my lungs since 1980, and have no intention to. Even if it becomes legal tomorrow, it's not going to change my outlook. I really don't desire to do that. But we're not. I say that to emphasize that we're not just crazy radical hippies looking for the government to give me an excuse to get drugged up. That's not the thing. That's completely a straw man argument.
I'll say that, but I will say I'm a hippie. I'm proud to be an anarcho hippie. You've met better than I am.
Yeah, I probably look more like the hippie part than you do, but it's there in your spirit. No doubt about that. And that's the freedom thing.
It certainly is.
That's why freedom is so important.
And I'm an armed hippie, too, and I'm proud of that, just like Michael Dean.
Yeah, I should mention that, too. I am very close to a 308 and a 380. So, and I'm actually sitting on a bed, and underneath that bed is a couple of other rifles that I really like. So, I like to shoot. I like very much to shoot.
Me, too. And I think that it's the, for me, it's the bane of kings to be a fine rifleman.
I like to, kind of brag on my rifle shooting ability. I'm pretty good with a rifle. With a handgun, I'm fairly pathetic. Since I learned how to shoot with a dominant eye, and I now shoot left-handed with a handgun, I do okay. And in a last-ditch effort, I could probably defend myself with a handgun. But in all honesty,
now Ben, give me 4 hours and a Glock on the range with you, and I can cure all of your ills.
I hope so. I hope to have that opportunity someday. If I ever get out to the beautiful West where you live, I definitely want to spend some time with you on a range.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to do that. And Arizona, as states go, is probably one of the freest states in the nation for guns.
And we're going to be back from the market in just a very short time with more on the Freedom Fiends Radio.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Shoving truth into your ear hole right here on the radio. Bill Buport is with me. My name's Ben Stone, and we're in hour two of the Freedom Fiends. We're in the second half of hour two, actually. So we were talking about the difference between decriminalization and legalization. We're talking about Portugal, which decriminalized it, and they put more of their emphasis on treatment and less of their and zero effort and zero emphasis and zero money on going out and chasing down people and destroying their lives because they happen to be doing something that's not hurting anybody but themselves. And that can even be argued. And that's really, I think, the key here with the bad part of the drug war is that it goes out to people who are not doing anything to anyone else. They are choosing themselves to partake of something that might or might not be good. You can argue, you know, however you want, but they're choosing to do that to themselves. And now you're taxing all kinds of people around the country to bring in force and aggression and assault these people and destroy their families, haul them away, shove them into a cage where life is going to be horrible on them, and tax all the rest of us to pay for those people to be shoved into a cage. And now all of us hardworking people out here in America are having to pay for this massive prison population and all the atrocities that go on a daily basis inside those cages. And we're paying for it against our will, whether we, you know, agree to it or not. And every aspect of that is immoral. It's immoral to aggress upon people in that fashion.
You know, isn't that the truth? Because immoral means do not justify moral ends. And I said this the other day on, I happen to be on Twitter because my editor said, what a great way to publish your books is by using Twitter. So I followed her advice. And I'm actors, but no state should ever have the right to touch a citizen unless it's in self-defense. But you'll notice that it's all about the initiation of aggression, the initiation of force. And the police state we have today, ask yourself a counterfactual, as one would do in historiography. What would happen if the police didn't have the drug war? What would they do?
Well, they would lose a lot of their funding, and they would, in all honesty, you know, they'd probably start becoming very aggressive on traffic and pulling you over for every little thing.
And then imagine if they, if somebody by a miracle said and waved a magic wand and said, "There's no such thing as asset forfeiture, asset seizure, and you can't gain revenue from tickets. You can only apply points against insurance." How many people would be pulled over for speeding?
Bingo.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes, indeed.
And
yeah, but like I said, you know, I said this in the other hour. Cops are the existential threat to human liberty, bar none.
That's really the truth. I mean, you have to really think about this a little bit. You know, communities tend to police themselves. And when there's somebody, when there's no, actual police force, officially designated police force, communities will police themselves. And they've done this throughout time. And they did it very successfully for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years before any government existed and before anybody wore a uniform and came into a community and enforced the law upon someone. And they can do it now.
Look, it still happens in families. All of us in our families have somebody who has, whether, let's say it's a gambling problem, or maybe it's a disease vector they were born with. They have Down syndrome or some other difficulty that causes them not to be able to be either neurotypical or function the way the rest in society. And I don't happen to be neurotypical, by the way, because I have Asperger's. So I'm on the autism spectrum. But nonetheless, there's so many folks out there who will move heaven and earth to take care of their children, their relatives, second, third generation. And I'm to think that this dispassionate third party in government is going to look out for their welfare better than the families will? Come on.
It's ludicrous.
It's absolutely ludicrous. It's like what we alluded to earlier, where so people can't govern themselves, but one person can govern a million or millions. Got it. That
Amazing.
Makes perfect sense.
A lot of this, you know, I don't know if you've ever read the stuff about the Old West, how, you know, Hollywood, the movies.
I have. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, they've totally perverted the actual history of the Old West and dime novels from back in the day that were written to tickle the fancy of people living in New York and Boston and so forth. It was total fantasy. The Old West was not like that. There were not constant train robberies and bank robberies, and there were not gangs of, you know, hole-in-the-wall gang type robbers all over the West just bringing mayhem. None of that is true. Now, sure, there were criminals in the Old West, just like there are criminals today. But one professor out of, I believe it was University of Dayton, did a study that found out that there are more bank robberies in the city of Dayton, Ohio, in 1 year than took place in the entire West from like 1870 to like 1900 or something like that. I can't remember the exact statistics. So the whole—
I believe that. And I recommend— go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the whole idea of the Wild West being bad and needing the great lawman to bring law, that's all fantasy. Go ahead, Bill. What were you going to say?
Oh, it is. I highly recommend a book on Amazon by Ryan McCracken, I think it is, who writes for LRC called Commie Cowboys, in which he talks about what the Western cinema portrayed as real government supremacism in so many of the movies until the 1970s. And he says, and I think this is very poignant, he says Little House on the Prairie, as quaint and idyllic and maybe a little Pollyannish as it seems, that's the way the West was won, where people figured out to took care of stuff. Maybe I grow honey better than Ben does, and Ben grows the best elderberries in the county. And I trade that. I mean, capitalism is a wonderful system in which two armed strangers never have to remove their guns from the holster. They've just met. They've exchanged goods and services through whatever medium it is, whether it's barter, coin, or specie. They shake hands. They exchange business cards. And they leave. Government doesn't behave that way because government never leaves the gun in the holster.
You know, you mentioned in your article that we were referencing earlier in the show that the Western expansion was a response to the constitutional government in Washington, D.C. And I've talked about this before there's real obvious examples like Daniel Boone. Daniel Boone got sick of the colonial government in Virginia. He just could not live under the oppression of the colonial government in Virginia. So he crossed the mountains and he moved into Kentucky. And he stayed in Kentucky successfully, loving it, loving the land, loving the people of Kentucky, functioning in Kentucky, not like the cartoon character in 60s TV was portrayed, although he wasn't an actual cartoon, but he was a cartoonish. Anyway, so Daniel Boone lived a wildly successful, peaceful life in Kentucky, all the way to the point of where the Constitution's tentacles reached into Kentucky, and Kentucky became a state, and they got a governor, and they got a constitution of their own. And you know what they did immediately? They put out a warrant for Daniel Boone, and he ended up having to go off of his own property and hide until he could arrange passage, like literally sneaking down the Ohio River to get away from government and to Missouri, where there was no government yet. And so Daniel Boone's whole life was one of trying to get away from constitutional government. And even in the very last days of his life, people would ask him, will you ever go back to Kentucky? And he would say, absolutely not. Death first. He will never set foot in Kentucky again. And because it was his problem with the government. And that was the government of Kentucky in the 1790s, in the 1800s. That's what the government was then, not just now. And that's the whole Western expansion was based on people trying to get away from this nasty constitutional government in Washington, D.C., and what it was infecting and doing to all the rest of the country.
I'm with you. And you know, to me, it's intuitive in my reading of history that I've gotten this impression that people with the Constitution and fleeing that kind of urban collectivist nonsense that was starting to emanate out from the Atlantic seaboard and seeping and superating into the West like an infection. And then people were just moving onward. You've seen that movie, The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Which is based on a book by Forrest Carter called Gone to Texas about the Confederate diaspora during Reconstruction after the War of Northern Aggression was lost, which I think is the Second American Revolution. Well, he goes out there in the movie with Clint Eastwood, which I really love. There's a scene in that movie, and you can find this on YouTube, where he meets with an Indian chief.
Yes.
And he goes there to parlay with him. That five-minute speech between he and that Indian chief sums up what you just said. Now, you said it eloquently, but it says it in a little bit more eloquently, just what you described.
Yeah, and that's based on an actual group of Indians that were brought in and met Abraham Lincoln, and there was like a photo op and stuff. That's based on an actual event, too.
Oh, he meets 10 bears. That's who it is. He meets 10 bears. It's people to look for. Outlaw Josie Wales meets 10 bears, and the speech and the parlay that goes on between the two of them, it's just priceless cinema. As far as cinema goes, and in my mind, as far as history goes, it's a real easy lesson of why spontaneous order works. Because they're both complaining about government predation while they're talking to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and even the character Josie Wales, you know, here's a guy who was often in the wilds of Missouri just trying to live his life and have his little farm and plow his field and raise his child. Gee, he just wanted to be left alone, and government came to him and gave him freedom good and hard.
We have not mentioned those three words, have we? Leave us alone. Just leave us alone. It's like whenever I hear, I have to correct people on occasion, Ben, when they say, well, we should, and I say, you know what? I is the only word that is ever in front of should.
Yeah.
By proper standards.
Yeah. That's so true. But people always, you know, there's this cycle. They always demand something bad happens. And the root of it probably is that there was some stupid law or some governmental action that caused the bad thing to begin with. And so the bad thing happens. And people immediately, the knee-jerk reaction is to look at the government and say, oh, something must be done. And the slime in government immediately go and they are going to fix the problem by passing yet another law. And it never works. It never gets better. It always gets more and more cumbersome, and it always just gets worse and worse and worse. And we're just saying, leave us alone. In the 60s, the mantra was, all you need is love. And that's real pretty, and it sounds real nice, but it's not true. What you really need is to leave me alone.
But, you know, love is part of that. I mean, that was the revolutionary teachings of Christ, for instance. I am not a Christian, full disclosure, but I have great admiration for the New Testament and great admiration for the Ten Commandments. But I have great admiration for Christ because Christ said, if you wish to worship a God, whoever that God may be, you need no earthly vessel or other human being between you and that God for you to have that communion.
That's a profound thing, too, if you think about it. More on the Freedom Fiends. We come back with Redemption in the Third Act. Stick with us.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Ben Stone, Bad Quaker, and Bill Buport from ZeroGov, and we were talking about the outlaw Josie Wales and Clint Eastwood and all kinds of cool stuff like that during the break.
I'm ready for redemption.
Yeah, we want to wrap this up on a positive note. We've kind of been beating up the government. Normally, Freedom Fiends is not a show about just beating up the government. Normally, it's a more of a upbeat show where there's a lot of, you know, goofing around and stuff. But Bill and I, you know, when we get together, we have a tendency to our minds are very much alike when we think about these things, and our knowledge of history is runs down the same lines. I think that's why we get along so well. We've never had this opportunity to really explore it, Bill, but I've always wanted to talk to you about things like the Crimean War and the Boer Wars and really get into some of the tactical stuff that, since I've been
a
little kid.
The reason for this is because you and I are the real sons of anarchy.
Yeah, exactly. But we never have time for that. I'm not sure that would make, you know, that would probably be really boring radio to listen to two guys talk about the Boer Wars and the variations between the first and second Boer War and things like that. That would probably be horribly boring to the radio audience.
I don't know if Dan Carlin can do a 6.5-hour podcast, part 3, on the Punic Wars or Ghosts of the Ostfront. You and I could get away with that.
We probably could. You know, I think, though...
So I'd like to speak to redemption, if I may.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Here's what I've got to say. Freedom is ours to get. And what we have before us right now is we're in the 21st century. America's headed for a collapse, an inevitable economic collapse, because this cannot hold. It is economically impossible to continue on the way it is. But the good news is this. SpaceX just had a successful space launch. Portugal, since 2001, as we discussed earlier, just decriminalized drug use in their country, and they have been wildly successful. We are seeing marijuana law after marijuana law. As bad as legalization is, it's really ripping asunder this whole fiction that has animated the drug war. And what's happened in Baltimore with the police has opened a lot of people's eyes. The videotaping, video surveillance, video recording of police brutality, violence, maiming, dog killing, you name it. There's a whole lot of people now who are awake to this who weren't awake to it 10 years ago. People are very cynical about government. People are exploring libertarianism. And it's just like I've said before, when Ben and I were at Porkfest last year, was it last year? I think it was last year.
Yeah, 2014.
That we were. When we were there last year, you couldn't swing a cat and not hit an anarchist. 10 years earlier, you would have been a minarchist. I mean, you'd hit a minarchist with a cat. But 10 years later, we're hitting anarchists and abolitionists with them. I think there's a sea change here. The terraforming that the fiends have been doing, especially Michael, especially you and all the others. I see a critical mass in the future here where people are going to say, you know what? Enough is enough. Ben told me that freedom's a good thing, and I think that I think he's onto something. Ben, take it away.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, and there's an important thing too to realize that you know, both Bill and I are we've said before, we're kind of gun guys, and we play around with military history, and we know a lot of the tactics. And, you know, I can bore people forever talking about, you know, the mistakes of Napoleon on the field and so forth. But We're not calling for a violent revolution. This is not the time or the place for that. What we're talking about, this change that Bill's talking about, is a change that happens in the mind. And it's something that is happening so fast right now, and it cannot be stopped. It's a giant freight train coming down the tracks, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to be easy to stop. And whatever gets in its way, you know, that's the will of people. That's how markets work. If everybody in the world wants a McDonald's hamburger or, you know, a Burger King hamburger, that's a huge demand. And just imagine what it's going to be like when more and more people say, I want freedom. And when that really catches on like the wildfire that it's becoming, there's just no stopping it. Bill, thanks a ton for coming on the
Annelids.
Show. Annelids. Yeah, worms. We went the whole
Ben,
show.
It was just great. It's always an honor to be with you, old son.
Hey, it's good to be with you too, Bill, my friend.